Hello, tech fans, and welcome in to episode 132 of the Tech Sideline podcast, originating from TSL's High Tech Studios in the Virginia Tech Corporate Research Center. We are so excited to be back together, bringing you a Tech Sideline podcast, and we've got a busy show planned for you today. We're going to break down the news of Raheem Blackshear winning his appeal. He's now immediately eligible. What does that mean for the Virginia Tech offense and the running back room? We'll discuss the North Carolina State-Virginia Tech football game being postponed, what that means for the Hokies, and we'll talk about Virginia Tech recruiting. All that and more coming up on episode 132 of the Tech Sideline podcast. And I'll get started right now. And with that, we welcome you back into the Tech Sideline podcast. Whether you're watching live on Facebook, watching archived on YouTube, or listening on Apple Podcast, SoundCloud, Spotify, Google Podcast, or on Stitcher, we've got so many ways that you can consume the Tech Sideline podcast. And we're glad you joined us as we record on Wednesday morning, September 2nd. I'm Evan Hughes, proud host of the Tech Sideline podcast. Pleased to be joined by our managing editor, Chris Coleman, our founder and general manager, Will Stewart. And he is the best podcast host in the land, Malcolm Stewart, behind the scenes, taking your questions for the end of the
best
show.
Podcast producer.
You're the host.
You're the host.
Look at that. I'm sorry. I thought you were
talking about yourself in the third person.
You know, I think Malcolm hosting a podcast would certainly be a fun show. I think we should do that in the future sometime. Malcolm, great to have you back again. The best producer in the land. Gentlemen, great to be back with you. Folks, a reminder, this week and every week, the Tech Sideline podcast is presented by the Fisher Law Firm, Virginia's trusted DUI and traffic defense firm dedicated to defending individuals charged with traffic-related offenses. The Fisher Law Firm handles cases throughout the Commonwealth of Virginia, and to date, the firm has defended tens of thousands of people charged with moving violations. For a free consultation, call anytime, day or evening, toll-free at 1-800-680-7031. Again, that's 1-800-680-7031. Or you can email the Fisher Law Firm at info@fisherlegal.com. We were just discussing it before we went live. It's been about 3 months since we have all sat down on this set. It's great to be back. How are you all doing here early in September?
Pretty well. Yeah. Got to watch a little Alabama high school football action on ESPN on
really?
Friday night, as expected. Yeah. Oh, yeah, it was like Spanish Fort versus somebody.
Well, then on Saturday, you had Shakur Sanders, five-star quarterback going to Florida Atlantic, the son of Deion Sanders, being coached by Deion, who's the head coach of the high school.
Wow. Man, I'm sorry I missed that.
Will Stewart, how are you doing?
Doing good. I'm feeling pretty satisfied because I made a prediction on Twitter, I think it was August 4th, that college football would be played this fall. And Central Arkansas and Austin Peay count, so college football has been played.
Did you get to watch that game?
You know, I had it on. I wouldn't say I watched it. I watched the very beginning when Austin Peay ripped off that 75-yard touchdown run. That was exciting. But the quarterback play was kind of difficult to watch. I didn't watch it all that closely. I was a little baffled that I think Central Arkansas in particular was passing as much as they were, because I wasn't impressed with either quarterback's passing ability, so you know, it made it kind of hard to watch. I don't want to be a Power Five snob, you know, or even really an FBS snob, but that made it kind of hard to sit there and watch the whole 3 hours. So I just kind of kept an eye on it. Turned out to be a really exciting game there at the end.
You know, there was a couple of years ago that Austin Peay was here at Lane Stadium.
Yeah,
I believe it was maybe
2012.
Yep.
Yeah, that's right.
And Austin Peay went up 3-0, and then Virginia Tech proceeded to win 52-3.
That was the game 5 days after that Monday night Georgia Tech game.
Wow. Yeah. So I applaud Austin Peay for, you know, just embracing the let's go Peay. You know, I mean, they just own it, you know. They don't shy away from it.
I remember being at that game in 2012 and sitting over by the away section of Lane Stadium where the fans sit, And when they went up 3-0, it was like they were winning the Super Bowl. I mean, they were just thrilled. Well,
Virginia Tech is probably ranked, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And
that was back when we were a big enough name that we'd get ranked just because we were Virginia Tech.
Just because they were Virginia Tech.
And as it turned out, that year we were not good at all.
Yeah. Dimitri Knowles was the star of that season opener, right?
With that late touchdown
against Georgia Tech. Yeah.
Well, college football is back. And there's a lot of college football news regarding the Virginia Tech Hokies, who opened their season in September. Again, college football's back. We're glad to have you back with us here on the Tech Sideline Podcast, episode 132. Let's dive right into it. We've got a busy show today. We begin with the news of Hokies football within the last week. Yesterday, it was announced that Rutgers transfer running back Raheem Blackshear won his appeal with the NCAA and is now immediately eligible to play for the Hokies. Blackshear has over 1,700 career yards from scrimmage and 12 touchdowns, 6 of which are on the ground, 6 of which are receiving touchdowns. Chris, I'll start with you. How much of a difference does Raheem Blackshear make for the Virginia Tech backfield?
Oh, it's a big difference, and I wouldn't just say backfield. I'd say for the whole offense, because he's a guy who's lined up as a receiver. He's lined up as a running back. He's lined up as kind of like an H-back even at times, and even as a Wildcat quarterback. So I'm going to stop short of saying that the offense was going to be designed around Raheem Blackshear, but he was going to heavily influence the type of plays that Brad Cornelison and the staff designed and put into the playbook this year. There's going to be some things in there that he's capable of executing that other guys aren't. You can do certain things with him in there that you can't do with other guys. You're more likely to have 2 tailbacks in the game at once if he's on the team. He's kind of a Swiss Army knife, as someone put it on Twitter, a jack of all trades. Fuente said he thinks he could play multiple positions on both sides of the ball because he's so smart.
Now, the exact quote was 4 or 5 positions on both sides
right.
of the ball.
So, no, he's not going to play defense. I don't want anybody to mistake that. But,
no two-way players.
He said he's capable of it.
Right, right. Now, they got him from Rutgers, and his former offensive coordinator at Rutgers was Jerry Kill.
So that's the connection there.
That's the connection. You know, I foresee him playing a lot this year, catching a lot of passes, getting a decent amount of carries. NFL Draft Scout actually ranks him the number 6 tailback for the 2022 draft. NFL teams like versatile tailbacks these days that can catch balls out of the backfield and everything like that. And he caught 29 passes in 4 games last year before redshirting.
That's a lot.
That's a lot.
Well, the great thing about him is he's a guy that when he's on the field, like one of the weapons coaches like to have at their disposal is being able to run many different things out of the same personnel. Mm-hmm. Groupings. They don't want to give away by sending one guy out and bringing another guy in. They don't want to tip what they're getting ready to do. And he's a guy that he can line up so many different places. He just really opens up the playbook without having to change personnel, without having to take the time to run a guy off the field and on the field. You can just line up and go with the next play.
I expect we'll see the pop pass come back to a certain extent.
Yeah, Twitter's been all about that over the last couple of days, the pop pass and predicting when that happens with Raheem Blackshear.
Yeah, I was watching a little bit of his Rutgers highlights the other day, and Brandon Patterson, I believe, put it in one of his articles. It wasn't a pop pass per se because the quarterback did drop back and didn't fake towards the line of scrimmage. But Blackshear himself, it was a pop pass action from the running back. He basically went out like he was going to block the defensive end or outside linebacker, and then boom, exploded up the field. And boom, wide open, easy touchdown. So I would expect that's coming at some point with him.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's good stuff. So the drama surrounding the transfer was, you know, that it was initially denied. And that turned a lot of the attention towards how Virginia Tech does these things. And maybe the fault, you know, was with the way that Virginia Tech was doing transfer waiver appeals. Not appeals, but transfer waivers. Because a pattern... You know, a portion of the fan base felt that a pattern was starting to develop where transfers to other schools were being approved quickly. And I pointed this out on Twitter. There's the Tua's little brother.
Talia.
So pronounce the last name for me.
Tonga Viola.
Yeah.
So he transfers in May and gets approved in August. And Blackshear transfers in January and is still waiting. So there was some criticism that surrounded how is Virginia Tech handling these things. And now Virginia Tech would never say this, but you know what we were told about the original waiver is that apparently for some reason it required Greg Schiano, the new coach at Rutgers, it required his sign off, which never happened. And that's why the original transfer didn't go through. So that leads to people criticizing Schiano. You know, honestly, Chris knows the timing on this stuff better than I do, but Schiano's a new coach. He's adding new staff, turning over old staff. It may have just slipped through the cracks.
Yeah, you know, whatever compliance personnel or minor staff member who would have been in charge of that in the past, maybe they got fired in the staff changeover and just the piece of paper never got put in front of him to sign.
And I will remind
nobody
you.
Nobody knew about it.
I will remind you that the Big Ten has said, we're not playing football.
Maybe that staff member's furloughed.
Maybe that person got laid off, right. Furloughed, or fired. You don't know. It could have completely slipped through the cracks, or maybe Shiano's being a jerk. It's one of two things. You know,
going back to him, the impact he can have on the field, you use the term Swiss Army knife, and I think the last person on offense who truly was a Swiss Army knife might have been Sam Rogers. But two completely different kinds of players. Mm-hmm. Question being, in Justin Fuente's offense, how important is it to have somebody who's multidimensional like Blackshear is?
I think in anybody's offense, it certainly helps because of what Will said. You don't know exactly – you know the personnel grouping, but you don't know whether he's going to line up as a tailback, as a slot, even on the outside or as an H-back or something like that. So just besides his talent level, I think that certainly makes life easier for offensive coordinators when you have a player like that.
Let's take a look at this running back room as a whole, and it certainly looks a little bit different from last year.
Looks a lot different from last year.
There's a lot of different pieces and different players involved. Of course, you returned Jalen Holston, who battled injury last year. You've got Kashawn King coming back after a promising start to his career, Blackshear, and then Khalil Herbert. So, Will, when you look at this running back room, who do you expect to touch the ball a lot down the stretch in these games? I mean, could we see a rotation of guys in the backfield early in the year?
Well, you know, Justin Fuente emailed me the depth chart the other day. by the way, I'm just kidding, folks.
Can't see the smile through the mask.
Yeah, so what are you guessing, Chris? Are you guessing Herbert and
I would say Herbert Blackshear. And Blackshear, 1A and 1B. And Fuente said Blackshear had been spending 50% of his time with the running backs and 50% of the time with the wide receivers. So yeah. I don't even necessarily say, oh, running back Raheem Blackshear. If this was fantasy football, you'd draft him and put him in that flex spot where you could put any offensive player, right?
So I think, you know, one of the things I'm looking for is just a more rugged guy, a guy who can – I'm not saying – Fuente's not a guy to give a guy a lot of carries, but somebody they can just take the pounding. Like, you know, we talked about Deshaun McLeese many times over the years where he would start the season out strong, seem to get worn down pretty quickly and then be strong again in the bowl game, you know, and Khalil Herbert is, I don't have his height and weight right off the top of my head, but he's number 21 on the roster.
He's like 5'9", 205, 210.
And this is the transfer from Kansas who also has had a promising start to his career.
He's a muscular looking dude, you know? So that's one of the things I'll be looking for is do they have guys that can carry more of the load and take more of the pounding? Cause that's part of it.
What it sounds like right now is your top three, Herbert, Blackshear, and Holston. With Holston also being a big guy, you know, 5'11", 215, 20 pounds. And I don't think anybody knew exactly how he was going to factor in coming off his leg injury. And then, of course, you know, Blackshear is the smallest of those, but still 5'9", 195, thereabouts. It's not like Deshaun McLeese, who always looked like he was playing at about 175 to 180.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, these are thicker built guys, which I think is good. It did not take Adam Lechtenberg long to turn over his running back room.
Yeah, so the question is, you know, where does Kashawn King fit in all this? And there was a heavy rumor that King was going to opt out for this year, and then the rumor went back in the other direction that he's not going to opt out. And, of course, nothing public was ever said. So now with Blackshear being available, that allows you to, and with the NCAA saying basically, you know, whatever you do this year doesn't affect your eligibility. It'll be interesting to see if King tends to get more spot duty instead of more regular duty. So that's another thing I'll be looking for.
Apparently, he reported back under 170 pounds, and he was listed at 180 last year.
Yeah.
So he either did not have access to a weight room or just didn't put in the work.
Right.
But even at his age, but somebody at his age shouldn't be losing weight like that.
Yeah.
Unless they just...
Assuming have, that
unless their diet is just terrible or something, right. You know, and who knows? We don't know his background, where he came from, what he has access to, and all that.
Right.
Fuentes said a couple weeks ago that right now he'd probably be the kickoff returner if the season started tomorrow.
That's true. He did say that.
Right.
Yep.
So, but honestly, if he's under 170 pounds, I wouldn't play him as a running back. The guy's going to get killed.
Yeah.
So I would have him return kicks. So he shows up to practice for the special teams portion of practice and then goes to the weight room. That's what I'd be having Keshawn King do this year. Normally I'd be like, oh, redshirt him, but you know, you don't need to redshirt guys this year.
Yeah.
I'm glad we had the word redshirt brought up within the first 20 minutes of the podcast.
Ding, all right, ding.
I'll just throw this out here. Think about next season. All right, so Tech signed like 15 or 16.
Oh, I'm getting
15 or 16 guys last year. They're going to sign 25 guys this year or thereabouts. That means next year Virginia Tech will have 40 true freshmen on the roster.
Technically, but true freshmen.
When you said bring up the roster on today's podcast, I have written in all caps, redshirt at Chris in my notes here. So believe me, it will be brought up later.
We could set the school record for redshirts next year.
Let's transition to the other news that's happened in the last week or so, and that's that Virginia Tech's opener against North Carolina State has been postponed after a rise in COVID cases in the North Carolina State program. So that's now rescheduled from September 12th to September 26th. And all of a sudden, Virginia Tech and Virginia open their 2020 seasons against each other, playing for the Commonwealth Cup. Will, what's your initial reaction when you hear about the two rivals opening their seasons against each other?
Well, there's two things you got to unpack here. You got to unpack the fact that the NC State game was so quickly moved, and we can talk about that. But yeah, let's talk about UVA. I got to figure this is advantage Tech, because Virginia Tech is bringing back an experienced quarterback, a lot of experienced players. I'm not an expert on UVA's roster. I know they're going to be breaking in a new quarterback for them. So I like that aspect of it. I think that favors Virginia Tech. And that's my quick and dirty take on it. Chris, that was going to be UVA's first game was going to be Tech no matter what, correct?
Yeah, because their opener against VMI was canceled.
So if Virginia Tech was going to play NC State, and sometimes let's say you have a conference game that's your second game of the year and you're opening with Austin Peay or an FCS team or something like that, you can go vanilla and not show a lot and still win the game. Virginia Tech was going to have to show a lot playing against NC State. They weren't going to hold anything back. So UVA would have had film to study, and that would have been an advantage for them. And that's an advantage that's gone, you know. And now it has the potential to be an ugly game. Sometimes first games between two Power 5 teams can be ugly. I don't know if you recall this or not, Evan, but when the ACC was first expanded, ESPN and ABC fell in love with playing Florida State and Miami on Labor Day night. And they did that for a few years, 2004, 2005, around in there. And the games were ugly because it was the first game of the year for the – I remember, you know, 13-10 and games like that.
They were also two really poorly coached teams at that time too.
This is true. Yeah. And that may have played a hand in it, you know. But I remember people scratching their head going, man, this isn't fun to watch.
All those athletes, and they were just ugly, awful football games.
So there was a lot of passion in the game, but not a lot of well-executed football.
So you mentioned the word ugly, and but – you said, you know, two Power 5 teams playing each other for the first time this season. It could happen. But, Chris, not only going at it, you know, two Power 5 schools for the first time all season opening their seasons, but no spring game.
No, you're right.
Fall practice has been completely different. So just how sloppy of a game could it be between the Cavs and the Hokies?
I mean, it has the potential to be sloppy. I think Will hit the nail on the head when he talked about prep and film. UVA is not going to have any film at all on Virginia Tech's defense. And this is why I was going to pick Virginia Tech to beat Penn State. So you know the personnel for the most part. But exactly what type of defense are you going to run? What are you going to be asking your players to do? What are Justin Hamilton's tendencies on – what are his blitz tendencies on third down? You know? So you're pulling up his old Clinch Valley UVA Wise film. Are you looking at VMI tape from his days there? Are you looking at the Buffalo Bills with Tierlink? Are you looking at Minnesota film with Tracy Clays and Washington State?
What is he going to do with Alan Tisdale? What is he going to do with Amari Barnes?
Right, you know, right.
Nobody can answer this.
All of that stuff. Is Tech going to play a lot of man coverage? Are they going to do more zone? What kind of zones? You just don't know. And because there's such a wide variety of backgrounds on this defensive staff, you've got a lot of stuff to study.
At your disposal.
Right. Now, obviously, they've known this is going to be their opening game for a long time now, so they've had plenty of time to study.
Yeah.
And if the UVA staff proved anything last year is when you give them 3 weeks or so, they can prepare. They had 3 weeks to prepare for Virginia Tech last year, and they won the game because
everybody knew their quarterback was going to run it, and they still found ways to get in.
And just like last year, they played Liberty before Virginia Tech. They had VMI before Virginia Tech.
Well, and last year they had a bye, then Liberty, and then Virginia Tech. Sorry about this mask. It's not staying on my face. So I think the big difference there is, of course, when they were preparing for Virginia Tech in those 3 weeks last year, is they had film to study. They don't have any film of Virginia Tech playing the defense they're going to play this year.
So
I think that's a big advantage for Tech.
Yeah, so two things come to mind. The 2014 Ohio State game when Bud just showed Ohio State something that they did not expect.
Well, both sides of the ball. We had a new quarterback.
Yep, very true.
Two true freshman receivers that nobody had ever seen on film.
Sam Rogers.
Yeah.
He was awesome that
game. Pride of Hanover County, baby.
So the other thing I think about, and Chris helped me fill in the blanks here, was it a Pittsburgh game where Bud unleashed Daddy Nicholas from like a stand-up rush deep?
I want to say that was, 2013?
Something like that, yeah. You know, and he had three sacks, I think.
Yeah.
And the ironic thing about that is Daddy Nicholas's tackling in space wasn't his strength, you know, but that's exactly what Bud had him doing. He completely disrupted Pitt's offense. So when I mention Alan Tisdale and Amari Barno and you know, whoever else, you know, who knows what Justin Hamilton's going to do. So that's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Now, on the other side of it, I think UVA's had five guys opt out. Right.
Yes, there is one position group in particular which I think has been hit hard.
But Bronco hasn't said who any of the players are.
Right. So how can
so for all this? I know,
I'm thinking about UNC. They've had some defensive backs.
Right.
Down.
Right. So for all we know, there are five important players or five nobodies.
Right.
So Virginia Tech could be like, oh man, we really like this linebacker. Here's what. We kind of want to tweak this in our game plan to avoid him, and then you roll out there and he's not even on the field, right? So Mendenhall's pulling a Fuente, basically, being very, very secretive. That's how football coaches are these days. So there's still so much unknown in this. Like, we don't even know. My gosh, let's say Hendon Hooker tests positive tomorrow. Guess what? He's not playing in that game if he tests positive tomorrow, most likely, you know, because he won't be able to practice for the next 2 weeks if he tests positive tomorrow. Even if he's back and tests negative the day before the game,
I don't know.
He wouldn't have practiced for the previous 2 weeks, so you can't start him,
right?
So there's just so much unknown as far as that goes.
Well, we're all sitting here assuming Hendon Hooker's going to start. We don't know that for a fact.
Correct, right? We don't know that for a fact. I don't know. It's just so much unknown going into the season.
Well, let's transition into this because, like you said, you were kind of bringing up a positive, right, that UVA is not going to have a bunch of film on Virginia Tech when they were supposed to
that
open the season against NC State.
Yeah.
But the downside to that is that Virginia Tech is going to have to play 10 consecutive football games with no bye week. So how concerning is that or not concerning is it, Will, that you have no bye week and you got to play 10 in a row?
Well, that's going to take its toll. You know, these are players that did not get to condition properly through the spring. They have been here longer than usual in the fall, but it is going to take its toll. Virginia Tech is not a team. Their depth is getting better, particularly at certain positions and position groups. But you see it every year. Guys start dropping like flies. you know, and so that's going to take its toll. And who knows what, you know, you look at that Clemson game at the end of the year. Clemson is a team that is deep.
Yeah.
Who knows what that's going to turn into at the very end of the year. So it is, that's my answer. It's going to take its toll.
All right, so the last time Virginia Tech played 10 football games in a row, when was it? Trivia now, question of the podcast.
Now, you said you put it, Chris, you said
I'm
you
pretty
put
sure
that
it was 1995, right?
That was going to be my guess, 1995.
You both are correct.
And for me, that was a guess. I didn't do any research.
According to webmaster Damon Sal, sent me the information. This was a Cincinnati game, September 16th, that ran through the UVA game, November 18th, 1995. So 25 years.
And honestly, I think if they played 11 games without a bye week, the opener against Cincinnati was on a Thursday, so then we didn't play 2 days later.
1995 Boston College.
Boston College opened on a Thursday night. So 2 days later, we were off on that weekend.
So, right.
So, yeah. So, but technically, that's still week one. So I think we played 11 games in a row.
Really kind of that year
with no bye. Yeah.
So there was a time period there when college football was still an 11-game season where they built in 2 bye weeks into everybody's schedule. And then they jumped to a 12-game season and they dropped it back to 1 bye week. So when you asked the question, I thought, well, you got to go. You know, there was early mid-2000s. There were a lot of bye weeks all across college football. So that was out. So I went back to 1995 immediately.
And Tech actually played UVA on, like, November 17th that year.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't remember what the last game of the year was.
Oh, that was it.
Oh, yeah. It's the
we just didn't
early.
Play them on Thanksgiving weekend.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, when Virginia Tech plays Virginia this year, they're going to have to bring a lot of grit. That's something we try and bring to the Tech Sideline podcast. We've got two grit hats out in front. Tech Sideline has a new sponsor in grit, including here on the podcast. Will's going to throw on a hat. Will,
oh, my head is too
tell
big
our
for
listeners
hat.
Who can't see and our viewers who are watching about our new sponsor.
All right, so the coaches have been wearing grit gear. They've got hats, shirts, and things like that. And so some enterprising Hokies decided to make their own grit gear. So they've got hats, T-shirts, and they have face coverings. And so they have signed up to be a sponsor on the website for the next month or two. So if you want to look at and buy, that matches your shirt perfectly.
It kind of does, actually. Yeah.
So if you want to check out the grit gear, just go to the Tech Sideline website and go to the homepage. And whether you're on mobile or desktop, what I'm about to say is true. You'll see a big fat grit gear ad at the top of the website. So click that and check it out and get you some grit gear. So I don't think, has the coaching staff said what grit stands for to them? I mean, they produced this like big long soliloquy about what it means, but as far as being an acronym goes, I don't think they've said.
I don't think they have.
Yeah, so these guys who put this together are saying, get ready, it's time. Yeah. We took suggestions one day on the podcast, I think, and got some pretty clever ones.
I mean, it's really cool. For the listeners that can't see it, I mean, it just big letters, grit. Yeah. And it's an excellent mesh hat. And, again, you can go to techsideline.com, get more information about it. But we're
is that
glad.
Style called a trucker hat? Is that what they call it?
I believe yes, that's a is. Trucker hat, the yep. one that I had on, and yours, I believe, is different. But they're both still at any rate.
Yeah, so they get
hats.
The maroon hat and the orange hat. They're very cool. So check them out. Again, go to the Tech Sideline homepage and you'll see the ad there.
Grit gear. And speaking of bringing grit to the Commonwealth Cup, it was announced yesterday that a lot of people are going to see the grit from both sides as the game is either going to be at 3:30 or 7:30 on ABC.
Televised nationally.
Nationally.
Yes.
So... pretty big, for this rivalry. You think about a couple of years from about 2012 to 2016, Commonwealth Cup wasn't really nationally televised. Yes, it was on ESPN2 or ESPNU, but think about the last couple of years. I mean, 2 years ago in Blacksburg, you had Adam Amin on the call and Rod Gilmore and the fumble in overtime. And then, of course, last year.
That was a Friday game.
It was, right. Correct. That's a good point. And then last year, of course, it was noon on ABC. So the last 3 years, this rivalry is getting national attention. How important is that for this rivalry just to get that recognition across the country?
So ESPN/ABC said that they were going to let the ACC games of the prior weekend happen. I'm not really familiar with the schedule. I think Miami plays. maybe Louisville. I think some of the competition there is Miami and Louisville playing each other.
Yes, about what time slot it's going
to
be.
Yeah, correct. So I think they're kind of waiting to see what happens with Miami in particular. If the Canes go out and lose, maybe they'll stick Tech and UVA at the 7:30 time slot.
And that's easy to do because, I mean, you're going to have a camera crew at both games. It's just a matter of which one is at night and which one's at 3:30.
Yeah. So it's an opportunity for Virginia Tech to make a statement. You know, in Bronco's first year, I don't remember the score, Chris, but Virginia Tech 52 just flattened UVA.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you want to become relevant again, this is an opportunity on national television with a big win to kind of – because Virginia Tech's a fringe top 25 team, particularly if you subtract the Pac-12 and the Big Ten. I think the AP rankings came out and Tech was ranked 27th, and if you take out the Big Ten and Pac-12, that moves Tech up to 18th. So with the schools that you know are playing now, this is an opportunity for Virginia Tech to get watched and make a statement.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a moment. The Pac-12, Big Ten now playing football this fall. How much will that affect Virginia Tech in a positive way, having national exposure?
Right. It opens up more time slots, right? Instead of that night game, you know, instead of Michigan versus Penn State, that Saturday night, I don't know what that would be.
Ohio State versus anybody.
Versus Wisconsin, right, or whatever. Well, now it's Virginia and Virginia Tech. Yeah. Somebody's got to fill the void, right? Yeah. So I think it's good from that standpoint, from an exposure standpoint.
Yeah, it's an opportunity for all of the ACC, really. And you know, given that it's now a 10-game conference schedule instead of just 8, there are a lot more marquee matchups.
Which to me is – it should be a 10-game schedule anyway.
You know, we could slice and dice that, but there's that whole discussion about how COVID and the coronavirus are clearly changing things for this year, but some things are, you know, it's going to get people to thinking. Mm-hmm. And a perfect example of this is Virginia Tech's move-in, their campus move-in. They staggered it and gave everybody times, and they've never done that before. Mm-hmm. When my son moved into South Carolina, they gave him a day and a time slot to move in, and it makes things so much smoother. And now that Virginia Tech has experienced that, I'm betting they're going to stick with it.
Yeah.
So you're going to see things happen this year that will actually last in some form beyond just this year. And you got to wonder if a larger conference schedule is one of those things.
Yep. Something that has lasted from years prior, continuing to 2020. We're glad to have Jonathan Fisher and the Fisher Law Firm back with us as a proud partner of Tech Sideline and a sponsor of the podcast. We're going to step aside for a break. Episode 132 of the Tech Sideline podcast. But when we come back, The Athletic's Ari Wasserman did a story on schools that should be, in his estimation, recruiting better. Virginia Tech was on that list. We're going to talk about the upcoming recruiting class for Virginia Tech, the job the Hokies have done for the 2020 and 2021 recruiting class. You're not going to want to miss this conversation. You're watching and listening to the Tech Sideline podcast brought to you by the Fisher Law Firm.
If you have received a DUI or other traffic-related offense, the road ahead can seem uncertain. Here at Fisher Law Firm, we have a team that is with you every step of the way. We have the experience that comes along with having defended more than 30,000 criminal and traffic cases statewide and the expertise to get the job done. Call anytime, day or evening, for your free consultation or a complimentary copy of my book. Don't forget to ask us about our free appeal guarantee. To learn how we can help solve your problem, check us out at fisherlegal.com. This is Jonathan Fisher, class of 98. Let's go Hokies.
Welcome back into episode 132 of the Tech Sideline podcast. We are so glad you're with us, whether you're watching or listening, recording on Wednesday morning, September 2nd. Evan Hughes, Chris Coleman, Will Stewart, Malcolm Stewart back with you. And, you know, we transitioned to an article that was actually written on August 31st, just a couple of days ago. I want to spend some time talking about it. Chris has prepared some excellent numbers for us. The Athletic's Ari Wasserman did an article that featured the five college football programs that should be recruiting better. Now, some of this was opinion-based. He went in and gave different reasons as why these schools were on the list. But 1 through 5, Florida State was number 1 on his list, Penn State 2nd, Virginia Tech was 3rd, UCLA was 4th, Ole Miss was 5th. Again, these are schools that should be recruiting better in his estimation based off of program prestige and success that they've had in years past. I want to read a paragraph that was written about Virginia Tech in this article. Quote, "So you may think that this year's class, currently ranked number 38, is an improvement. But is that what Virginia Tech is now? What about the program that played for a national title in 1999 and won at least 10 games from 2004 to 11, the Hokies' first 8 years in the ACC? Is that program dead? Maybe it is because competing for a national title is much harder now than it was during the height of the Frank Beamer era. But even so, there's no reason why Virginia Tech's brand name and location shouldn't at least keep it in the top half of the Power Five, right? Close quote. So that was written a couple of days ago. Chris, you brought some stats in. What do you make of Virginia Tech being on that list, and do you agree with what that paragraph just read?
I think there was an article written last summer that got the numbers of all public schools for how much they spend on recruiting, how much money they spend on it. And there's a direct correlation between recruiting rankings and how much money schools spend. For the most part. Like, for example, Georgia was number one, and their 2018 class was first, and their 2019 class was second. All right, so here's your top 10 spenders in terms of recruiting. Georgia, Alabama, Texas, Clemson, Texas A&M, Florida State, Michigan, Penn State, LSU, Oklahoma. Those teams, from a recruiting standpoint, are getting what they pay for. You know, Washington State, Kansas State, Arizona State, Texas Tech, Maryland, they're at the bottom of the list in terms and money spent on recruiting. They're also getting what they pay for. Generally speaking, schools on this list, they're getting what they pay for. Now, Virginia Tech is an example. Virginia Tech is 40th on this list.
In terms of spending
on recruiting. And it does not include private schools, because private schools don't report. It also doesn't include Wisconsin, because Wisconsin spends so little on football recruiting that they don't even make the list, which is incredible to me.
Yeah.
But Virginia Tech is 40th, ahead of only Purdue, NC State, Arizona, Maryland, Texas Tech, Arizona State, Washington State, Kansas State, and Mississippi State. And with the 40th most spending, Virginia Tech signed the 24th best class in 2018, the 26th best class in 2019. The 2020 class wasn't as good, but it was a smaller class, and, you know, we've beat that horse to death. This year so far, Virginia Tech is 38th, I believe, which is about what they spend. People wondered why Virginia Tech did not get a new coach recruiting boost with Justin Fuente. I think they did. We just didn't know it. Let's see. So Virginia Tech, here's some other numbers for you. Recruiting spending for all sports, Virginia Tech spends almost $1.6 million on recruiting. 35.4% of that goes towards recruiting, which is one of the lowest numbers.
For football.
For football, yes. One of the lowest percentages in the country.
Read that stat again real quick.
Okay. Virginia Tech spends 35.4% of all recruiting spending on football recruiting.
Right.
North Carolina, meanwhile, spends 52.2% of their recruiting money on football. That equates to them spending about a little over $400,000 more per year on football recruiting than Virginia Tech. And this was before Matt Brown got there.
Before he really got everybody hired and got rolling.
Right. So let me just go through some of the schools that spend more money on football recruiting than Virginia Tech.
Now, from a total dollar
standpoint. From a total dollar standpoint.
We're back to talking about total dollars.
Yeah. I'm just going to name some random schools that will probably surprise you. Georgia Tech, West Virginia, Colorado, Cal, Oregon State, one of the worst athletic departments in the country, Missouri, Indiana.
Big Ten money.
Right. Virginia. Virginia spends, looks like about $150,000 more per year in football recruiting than Virginia Tech. Illinois spends more. Kentucky spends more. Rutgers spends almost $300,000 more per year than Virginia Tech, and that was before Greg Schiano was hired.
With his many, many demands for support staff and all that.
Utah, Iowa State, Minnesota, Kansas, they all spend twice as much money on football recruiting as Virginia Tech. You get what you put into it. You know, if I go to Lowe's and I buy their cheapest dishwasher, you know, and it breaks, that's my fault. Okay, that's not the people who made the dishwasher. It's cheap for a reason, right? I completely disagree with that quote. I mean, all these numbers indicate that you get what you put in to recruiting, and Virginia Tech, when Virginia Tech, again, I'll point this out all over again, at Virginia Tech's peak, they were third in the country in coaching staff salaries.
Yeah, back in the year 2000.
That they had brand new facilities, better facilities than everybody else in the Merriman Center. They had the best strength and conditioning coach in the country. They could afford elite assistants like Jim Cavanaugh. State of Virginia talent was better, in my opinion, back then than it is now. When he brings up location, I'm sorry. Location is not an advantage for Virginia Tech. Blacksburg's a nice town, but it's not a convenient town. You know, the other fan base, well, NC State really wants to fire their coach, and you know, NC State is 42nd in recruiting spending, and they've signed the 26th and 29th best classes. All right, that they are out kicking their coverage as well.
Yeah.
Some underachievers on here are probably Utah spends a ton of money, one only 33rd and 42nd in recruiting class. Iowa State spends a ton of money; they're 16th, but only 55th and 46th in recruiting class rankings. Now you can argue that those two schools, you know, they're way out in the middle of nowhere. So they have to spend a lot more to even be able to have a chance to compete. Although Wisconsin doesn't even make this list. Wisconsin only spends $350,000 a year on football recruiting. That's 28.6% of their overall recruiting budget, which is dead last on this list.
Mm.
Wisconsin knows who they are, man. They sign like the 40th or 50th best class every year. They redshirt their guys, and they just get guys that fit their culture. And I think it's more realistic for Virginia Tech to find success in that model than it is
in trying to outspend everybody.
And all of a sudden coming up with an extra $2 million a year to spend on football recruiting, especially in a year where we might be facing $50 million in revenue losses.
Oof.
Right? So, yeah, I would completely disagree that Virginia Tech isn't recruiting up to its potential. I mean, these numbers to me, they're just factual. You've seen North Carolina up their recruiting game, and I mean, Virginia Tech has just fallen behind in their support for the football program. I mean, Frank Beamer is a Hall of Famer and a great coach, but he also had access to more resources than everybody else had at the time when we were at our peak. And the schools that could generate more revenue eventually woke up and started outspending Tech.
So, to add some context to that, you ask yourself, how did this happen? How did we get here? And this is my opinion. Your mileage may vary. As we've documented many times, Nick Saban changed the model when he went to Alabama,
mm-hmm.
which was 2008, 2009?
2007, I believe.
He had been at LSU. Then he went, I believe, directly to the Miami Dolphins.
Yep.
And while he was at Miami for a year and a half, however long that was, he just got to looking around how pro organizations are run and how much resource they put into scouting players. Clearly, they don't recruit, but they scout. And so he just got to thinking. So when he came to Alabama, he staffed up in recruiting in a way that nobody else had ever done. And Nick Saban changed the model at that point in time. Let's put that at 2009 to be generous. It was probably, the machinations were probably already underway. But by 2009, he had his model in place to really staff up recruiting. So you go over to Virginia Tech, and, you know, that was six more years that Frank Beamer was the head coach up through 2015. Gene Weaver was the athletic director for most of that time. And particularly towards the end, Jim wasn't healthy, you know, and his ability to put in the time and energy was compromised. So you had a football coach at the end of his career who was used to doing things a certain way, and it was a formula that worked very well. And I'm actually not criticizing, by the way. Because at the end of his career, he continued to find, I would say the depth of Virginia Tech's recruiting at the end of Frank's career wasn't as good, but the top level guys were still outstanding. Look at that 2016 team, the Edmonds brothers and Tim Settle, and you can go on down the list, the tremendous amount of talent that Frank left behind, but it wasn't very deep.
Yeah.
So anyway, you know, you had a head coach who believed in relationships. He didn't believe in large staffs. I don't know if he even thought about it. He had his way of doing things. And you had an athletic director who was also not on the cutting edge. So that was all the way up through 2015. And when Whit Babcock came on board in 2014, one of the things I used to fuss about all the time was Jim Weaver used to run the athletic department tremendously in the black. at times, I'm not exaggerating, $8 million in 1 year in the black. And he would he would choke off certain programs even though he had the money. And the classic example is Bonnie Henriksen wanted to raise, well, she was making $250,000 a year, and Kansas offered her $500,000 a year. So you sit there on the surface and you say, that's just another $250,000, Jim. You're making $8 million. What's the big deal? But that was the way he operated. So when Witt got here, Witt started putting more resources into the Olympic sports in both facilities and coaching staffs. And that, I believe, is where his focus was. And it is my opinion that things were allowed to slip, both in terms of facilities, which we've talked about, but in terms of support staff. You know, the curtain got peeled away a little bit when John Yetsi went on the Sons of Saturday podcast, and I didn't listen to it. Chris did. He basically told stories like, we've got 5 recruiting assistants. UVA has 10. All you got to do is go to Clemson's website and Alabama's site and look up the number of analysts they have.
Alabama's got former head coaches and like support staff roles.
So not only did Nick Saban put the model in place, but Virginia Tech did not react to it through 2015. And then didn't react to it, in my opinion, when Justin Fuente arrived and was working in concert with Whit Babcock. Now, Virginia Tech is making moves, they're making changes, they're adding more staff. A full decade after Nick Saban first did it at Alabama, and others had already started doing it. And when Greg, we mentioned Greg Schiano, when Greg Schiano got hired this go around by Rutgers, he came rolling in and said he gave them a huge amount of money that he wanted for support staff and all that.
Over $7 million for assistance.
Bet Rutgers wasn't really doing that. And at first they kind of looked at it and said, sorry, no. But anyway, my point is that once Saban started doing it, other schools started doing it, and Virginia Tech for a full decade pretty much didn't catch up. So that's, in my opinion, why you have the big spending discrepancy.
Right. And so I want to give a few more numbers here. So as I said, Virginia Tech spends 35.4% of their entire recruiting budget on football. Check out these percentages for the other schools, some other schools. Alabama, 70.7%.
Oh, gosh.
Georgia, 65.8%. Clemson, 63.8%. Florida State, 61.8%. Texas, 56.9%. A&M, 56.3%. You know, Oregon, 53%. North Carolina, 52.2%. Auburn, 51.9%. Penn State, 50.5%. So you get the point here. These schools have more money, and then they're spending a higher percentage of that money on football than Virginia Tech. You can do the math here and figure out why Virginia Tech's not as successful as they used to be. You can't expect in this day and age when sports are about money, you can't expect the team that's not spending the money to be competitive with the teams that are. I mean, so
consistently. You can do it here and there. So,
yes.
Like, where's Minnesota on that list? Because I think P.J. Fleck is recruiting fairly well.
Oh, no, he's doing worse than his numbers.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's just a place where they got a ton of money.
Man.
I mean, look, they're 15th in spending, and their recruiting class rankings 38th and 45th.
Well, there you go.
P.J. Fleck, because ESPN wrote a couple cool articles about him, in my opinion, is just – he would not do that at Virginia Tech, where he had half as much money to spend, you know?
Well, he did win 11 games last year.
He did win 11. Did he win 11?
No, I guess. I thought they went 10-2.
Whatever. Anyway.
Well, they won 10.
He's a good football coach. But, like, he would not come in here and magically start signing top 10 classes for Virginia Tech.
Because
like,
he's not doing it in Minnesota.
Correct. And they're spending twice as much money.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, to me, man, it's just – You got to spend more money if you want that type of success. So join the Hokie Club.
Put your pitchforks away, everybody.
Right.
You know they know about this, and you know I just detailed how I felt like Virginia Tech fell behind and didn't pay proper attention to it. But I think those days are over.
I mean I think Justin Fuente knows this, and I think when he threatened to go to Baylor, that was his way of saying, "Hey,
rattle in the cage.
Please listen to me. I've been telling you this."
Yeah,
he has shot across the bow.
Yeah. Right.
So we'll see. Now, here's the thing. Like Virginia Tech has hired 3 new staff members in the last 2 or 3 weeks. You know, Corey Fuller, Jerron Gavea Winslow, and
Alex White.
Alex White. that's a big deal considering Virginia Tech is about to lose millions and millions and millions of dollars. I'm sure there's a hiring freeze throughout the entire athletic department unless it's considered a key, key position.
That so, tells me that donors have donated and that's what it's earmarked
for. Right. Correct.
That's my guess.
Right, right. That's what it's earmarked for. Like Cincinnati, for example, just they dropped men's soccer in the spring, but then they just basically got huge donations from a couple of donors, and now they have a higher paid assistant coaching staff than Virginia Tech and a bunch of other Power Five schools, by the way. Yeah. Cincinnati. So, I don't know. Look, I don't like it. I don't like that you have to spend this much money to be successful in college football these days. But apparently you have to, unless you're Wisconsin.
So what's
there's something special about that Wisconsin.
I mean, I think Alvarez is a genius as far as creating a culture there. Yeah. I think he's a better athletic director than he was football coach, to be perfectly honest. And he was a good coach. So you got a couple choices if you're Virginia Tech. You could try to go all in on the Clemson model, which you're going to have to really raise some more money to do that. Or you could just be like, you know, let's just try to be Wisconsin. Now, I don't think our fan base on the whole is as knowledgeable about Wisconsin. Like, I don't think our fan base, obviously, this year, we have the 38th ranked class so far this year, and our fans don't consider that good enough.
But you know what? The average player rating is about the same as it was last
year. Right, right.
Quickly, on this note, let's transition to talking about the recruiting class from 2020 and 2021. Mm-hmm. How have those classes been shaped at this point, considering the fact, again, that at this point you've got 40 players coming in over the next 2 years at this moment right now?
It's a personnel management nightmare. All right, Virginia Tech signed, what, three? They have three true freshman defensive ends right now on the team, four if you count Darryl Bailey, who I think will be a tackle. And they right now they've signed two for next year and would like to sign a third. But guess what? Right now, if they sign a third, that means they'll have six true freshman defensive ends on the roster next year.
Yeah.
That's not going to work. All right, half those dudes, I mean, there's always going to be attrition, right? But you think that sixth guy is, I don't know, there might be, I wouldn't commit to Virginia Tech if I was a defensive end right now, because I know there'd be five other true freshman defensive ends in the program next year.
But that's going to be the case at a lot of programs.
Well, it depends on the position. Like somebody else isn't going to be overloaded at defensive end. Maybe they're overloaded at wide receiver.
Right.
So if I'm that defensive end recruit, I'm trying to find the school that maybe didn't sign any defensive ends at all last year, had a bad year in defensive end recruiting, as opposed to going to Virginia Tech and competing with five other guys. Whereas, you know, if I'm a wide receiver recruit, or I don't know, defensive tackle is probably the right call. If I'm a defensive tackle recruit from a school that happened to have loaded down on defensive tackles the last two classes, I'm like, I don't really want to compete with six other true freshmen in my position. Maybe I should go to Virginia Tech instead, where they haven't signed a lot of defensive tackles. So I think you're going to see some fallout over the next few months when it comes to things like that. Because I think coaches, when the NCAA made the announcement that players
you get a pass on eligibility,
I think the preseason had already started, and coaches are in full football coaching mode at that point. At some point, and I'm sure Fuente's a deep-thinking guy, so during one of their – Tech has been, like, taking multiple days off of practice and things like that. So I'm sure in one of those breaks, he sat down and thought about it, and he's like, how in the world am I going to deal with six true freshman defensive ends next year? How am I – you can't make – that's just not going to work. Look, there's going to be attrition there.
I heard a quote about the NCAA's decision that really crystallized it for me. I was probably listening to SiriusXM, and whoever was talking said, "It's that looks great on the surface from the NCAA, but what they've done is they pushed all the problems and everything down onto the schools and the players. This is going to affect opportunities for the freshman class that just enrolled and the freshman class that's going to enroll mm-hmm. next year,
mm-hmm.
because." Even to my knowledge, the NCAA hasn't said, oh, yeah, you can now have more than 85 scholarships. They've said you can keep more players, but you can't necessarily have more scholarships. And even if they said you could have more scholarships, there are many athletic departments in the country that couldn't afford this, particularly in the wake of COVID-19. So it is a moving forward 6 months from now, a year from now, this is going to be a nightmare for athletic departments to deal with. And it is going to result in a lot of players who otherwise would have had the opportunity to play college football being told, you know, ushered out of the program, let's put it that way, with that otherwise wouldn't have been.
All right, last thing on recruiting. Looking at the 2021 class, again, 25 signees, just quickly, overall reflections on how that class is shaping right now in terms of talent.
Well, I mean, with everything I know now, it seems about normal.
One of the differences in these two classes, Evan, is that there's almost a complete lack of four-star recruits. And that could trigger a discussion that goes on 15 minutes. We don't need to get into it. Virginia Tech has historically been able to sign multiple four-star recruits each year. Out of these 40 players you're talking about, I think there's only one four-star.
Is that Alec Bryant?
Here's
the thing. I think he's the third best of the defensive ends we signed.
Well, you know, so you can argue that certainly ratings this year are, you know, do they mean? Because they haven't had camps and evaluations and things like that.
You were going to ask about that, weren't you?
No, I'm sorry. I was just going to mention the fact. Go ahead.
Let's say, Virginia Tech got that commitment from an Alabama running back.
Yeah, I was about to bring up Kenji Christian.
Okay, well, Alabama's playing high school football this year. Virginia and North Carolina are not playing high school football this year. So that tight end Virginia Tech just got a commitment from North Carolina.
Jared Gibble.
Or any in-state guy that has a commitment from this year. How do you rank those guys when they play no senior season? So is Virginia Tech's commit from Alabama going to jump up in the rankings simply? And is he going to
actually playing football?
Because he's actually playing football.
Yeah.
Like, the rankings this year are just going to be completely
Can you imagine the discussions at Rivals and 24/7 about how do we deal with this?
Yeah. It's awful.
Well, folks, we're getting ready to get to the Facebook Live questions. If you have a question for Will or Chris, be sure to drop it. Malcolm will get to it. Last thing to discuss before we get to the questions, however, is just about the athletes at Virginia Tech. And, of course, COVID-19 has been such a prevalent topic for quite some time now. Virginia Tech on Monday updated its dashboard. On Monday, there were a total of 178 positive cases since testing began 3 weeks ago.
Okay.
This was on Monday.
So it's cumulative.
Of the 10,053 tests administered, again, this was on Monday. So the reason we bring it up, though, is just because of the athletes. Of course, right now, they're practicing. Like you said, the football players are being tested, three times a week is what you said. But they're also having to interact in person. Question being, how does all of this affect Virginia Tech student athletes right now with classes starting and the cases rising a little bit from last week to this week?
I'm guessing most of them have online classes only. So I don't think they're necessarily impacted by the academic side. I think they're impacted by the social off-campus lifestyle side of it. I think that's a more likely scenario for a player to catch coronavirus or any regular student to catch coronavirus, in my opinion. I think the off-campus parties and things like that, that's COVID central. I don't think a structured environment is something that's going to transmit it a whole lot. So to me, it impacts it from the standpoint of if you see an increase in number, some people have a natural inclination to just get scared and say, oh my gosh, cancel football season. Right? That's natural for a lot of people. So to me, that's how it affects football players is, okay, because kids in Fox Ridge get coronavirus, is that going to make people want to cancel football season? So, I mean, that's my honest answer on that. Like I think they would be better off if the students hadn't returned to campus. But, you know, that wasn't going to happen, of course.
I believe that the ACC and SEC and Big 12 are intent on pushing ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you need to look to the, I don't want to say the example that North Carolina and NC State set, but just that case study. North Carolina has sent their on-campus freshmen home. I mean, this happened a week or two ago. Last I heard, they were down to about 1,000 to 1,500 kids left on campus. But they didn't stop practicing football, and they still plan on playing football. So I think the two things are separate.
Yeah.
I think if you want to talk about canceling football season, you're only going to pay attention to the cases and the hospitalizations and such that are occurring among the actual football players. I don't think the student population at large is an issue when you're talking about athletics. That's my take on watching what is unfolded.
All right, last word real quick. One thing I know we wanted to bring up as well, Virginia Tech announcing President Tim Sands saying no tailgating this year at games. Of course, no official announcement on what the attendance policy will be, if there will be one at this point. But Will, what was your reaction to that news?
So the release said that there would be no tailgating in athletic lots and in Town of Blacksburg public parking spaces and areas. So, number one, I think it was premature because if Virginia Tech's only going to have 1,000 fans attend, and that's actually going to be family, it's not even going to be fans. If there are only 1,000 people who are allowed to be in Lane Stadium on game day, then this announcement is fine. But if I am told that there is a quote-unquote task force in front of the governor, whatever that means, trying to get him to approve larger gatherings for, you know, basically Tech and UVA football. Maybe, well, JMU is not really going to play much, if right. at all. Why not wait and find the outcome of that before you make this announcement? So it could be a little premature. And the other thing is, so for instance, I tailgate out on Edgewood Lane in a big lot behind a house. This is an outside non-public parking area. What if 8 or 10 cars roll up in this lot and tailgate on game day? What does that mean? Are the cops going to go by and try to bust you? Not to mention that since you can't be outside, that's going to push everybody inside, which is more dangerous. So
right.
I don't want to sound like I'm being critical. I get it. If you want me to plant my flag in the ground, I think it's premature and an overreaction. But I get that I guess what I would say is, listen, man, control your space on campus and let the Town of Blacksburg do their own thing. I'm not real fond of the university and the Town of Blacksburg working together to bust students who are off campus. Others may have a different opinion, but that's just my take.
Yeah, my first thought on it was, hey, I'm happy. There's two ways to look at it. From an economic standpoint, I'm happy for the local businesses because this is going to get some people in Sharkies and Champs and places like that to watch the football game. And those local businesses can use the money, right? Now, I guess the reason they decided on this was to try to make sure the virus doesn't get spread, but what they've done is driven people from an outdoor environment into an indoor environment. Like, you think those kids who tailgate on Center Street before football games, you think they're just going to say, oh gosh, I guess we just can't party before the game? Guess what? They're going to party indoors. Their beer pong's going from outside to inside.
However, the maximum amount of people is 15, and they're really cracking down.
Allowed in an indoor space.
Correct.
So be quiet, because if you get called because you're being if the cops get called on you because you're being too noisy,
right,
then they're going to come in and start counting people.
Right.
Pretty sure we live in America. I'm pretty sure they can't just roll up to an apartment, knock on the door, and start counting people without a reason for being there.
Yeah, you would have to know the laws and everything. But yeah, I don't know. I think the whole pushing people to an, we'll see how it works.
Yeah.
It's one of those things, like, you know, there are laws, and then there are enforced laws.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Like, on paper, it doesn't make sense to me because it means more people will be indoors drinking instead of outdoors drinking. And to me, it just seems like the indoor thing is more dangerous. We'll just have to wait and see how it all works out.
So we've covered nearly 10 topics in an hour. Just so much to get through Virginia Tech Athletics. We're just over an hour in. And without further ado, it's time to get to you, the heart of the show, the ones who make the Tech Sideline Podcast what it is. The viewers, thanks so much for watching on Facebook Live. I'll turn it over to the best producer in the land. He is Malcolm Stewart. Malcolm, what's going on, my friend?
How's it going? We'll start with Tristan Raish. I hope I pronounced that right. Considering Fu's comments about the quarterbacks, essentially I'd be lying if I said the quarantine didn't affect timing of the passing game, etc. Is the subpar QB play from that SCS game possibly foreshadow an overall decline in the passing game efficiency in college football this year?
That's a good point. And for Virginia Tech, from specifically, it's not just the quarterbacks missing time with their receivers. It's the fact that Virginia Tech is going to have two key receivers this year that were not in the program last year, Chenga Hodge and Evan Ferris. You know, they're still learning the offense.
Not to mention
Blackshear, you know. So it's not just the fact that they weren't getting a lot of time together. It's just three key members of that unit are new and still learning the offense. So, yeah, I mean, it's certainly possible that we don't look like a well-oiled machine offensively from a passing game standpoint early in the season. And, you know, there's probably some other teams that could say the same thing.
Yeah, that's something to watch. To be fair, my criticism of the FCS play was mostly of the mechanics and accuracy of the quarterbacks. You know, I thought they moved around in the pocket really well, and then they'd uncork something flat-footed that it's like, dude, set your feet. And, you know, it wasn't a timing and a pattern thing. It was more just the mechanics of the QBs.
Right.
Good question, though. All right, what you got next, Malcolm? I've got some stuff off of Twitter we can do, but go ahead and what's on Facebook?
We'll do one from Johnny Callahan. Is the 2021 recruiting class a disappointment based on the lofty expectations that were placed on it?
No. I mean, I just went over those numbers, I think. I don't think I can address that any different. I mean, we're 40th in spending, and we have the 38th best class, and generally these days you get what you pay for. So I think it's right in line with what we should probably expect.
I have a different take on that. I'd have to go look at in-state class rankings for the last two or three years to really cement this opinion. But if you just look at the 2021 class, Virginia Tech is absent from the top 17 or 18 players in the state.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we've been told at various points in the past, oh, yeah, tough year in-state, but, man, look at 2020. 2020 is going to be good in-state. Well, yeah, tough year, but 2021 is going to be good in state, and I'm still waiting for that to come true. And I'm not sure that's budget related. There are, and don't give me that, yeah, Virginia Tech doesn't want any of the top 15 players in the state. That's not true. There are players in this state they want, and they're not getting. And, man, I forgot the question. What was the question?
is the 38th ranked class disappointing?
So it was an aggregate question.
Yes.
And I started getting down, and instead of taking a macro look, I was taking a micro look, and I was getting ready to talk about specific recruits. So
yeah, I mean, if you take the micro look, you know, it depends on which part you're looking at. In-state recruiting, as far as your top level recruits, yes, disappointing. Defensive end recruiting on the whole, very excited about.
Yeah.
Going to California and getting a borderline four-star corner, very excited about that. So there's the defensive tackle recruiting, kind of disappointed, especially when you consider how well defensive end recruiting has gone. But on the macro level, I think it's probably about what we should be expecting going forward, unless they just start dedicating a lot more resources to it.
Yeah,
and you know, as far
so unless you can leverage in-state connections to grab a four-star here and there, you're not likely to go out of state and grab four.
You know,
I just
spent the weekend in the 757, and I just don't think Virginia Tech is very big across the state anymore.
Not anymore. No.
I just didn't see that many Virginia Tech license plate or people wearing Virginia Tech gear. I mean, the 757 is way over there. I mean, Virginia Tech, the people around Blacksburg have more in common with people from Eastern Tennessee than they do like your average 757, Joe.
Yeah.
It's just a completely different part of the state. So
that changed for a while.
It did. But I just think, I don't know, just being out there.
The vibe is different.
Yeah, it's just different than it used to be.
Yeah.
Good question.
Ivan Morozov might sound familiar.
Russian Hulk?
Wow, he didn't answer my email the other day. I sent you an email, Ivan. Answer.
Huh. Well, we shouldn't answer his question then.
Well,
I don't hold a grudge.
No, I'm just kidding.
Yes, will the media be allowed to cover the games and interview the players?
Okay, so let's talk about that. That's
sure.
I tend not to talk about what affects the media because there's that fan reaction. Who cares? No, it is different. It's going to be weird. So the photographers, Ivan's one of our photographers, John Fleming is another. They're starting to email me and go, hey, what's the plan for this year? And I'm like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, we don't
Virginia
have one.
Virginia Tech hadn't told us yet. We don't have one. The game is now 10 days away, and we have not been told. So Virginia Tech's being squirrely about telling us, and that may be that they're waiting on that task force answer, because if you only allow 1,000 people in Lane Stadium, that includes players, officials, press, and so maybe it's impossible to make that decision yet. But we have been told through a Tech spokesman, you know, most likely post-game interviews are going to be a Zoom-type situation. So, wow. And so I've had a couple people email me and say, hey, is there any way you can get me in the stadium this year? And I'm like, dude, I don't think I'm going to be in the stadium this year. I'm
pretty sure I can't get myself in the stadium this year.
So it would not surprise me if you wound up, gosh, I don't want to commit and say the press box might be completely empty and everybody might be watching the game on television at home and then connecting to a Zoom call to ask the coaches and players what happened. But I could see a situation where there are very few actual reporters in the press box.
And, oh, sorry.
The post-game interviews will be via Zoom or some other method. And the only photographers on the field will be Virginia Tech athletics photographers, and that what are called pool photos will be distributed. So it's going to make covering football very weird.
Well, put yourself in the position of a newspaper. Oh, gosh. Let's say you're the Norfolk Virginia Pilot, Norm Woods, your beat writer, right? You send him to Blacksburg for every Monday and Tuesday interview and every football game. And is the Norfolk Virginia Pilot going to figure out during the course of all this that Norm Wood is writing just as good of articles with Zoom interviews as he is driving to Blacksburg every week? Is he going to write just as good a game recap after when the post game is on Zoom as it is if he was there in person?
I used to write darn good recaps just watching the game just, on the television.
You can see the game better on TV.
Yeah.
You've got replays. You've got announcers explaining things to you. And, you know, there have been many a times where I've gotten home after a game and I've got on our message boards and I've been like, hey, guys, what happened on this play? I was in the stadium, so I couldn't see it. You guys had a better view, right?
Yeah.
So, and that's actually a long-term problem. Are people going to go back to football stadiums after they get used to watching them on their 70-inch high-def TV?
So to close out the discussion, the cynical part of me thinks that there are certain athletic departments, maybe a lot of them, and maybe Virginia Tech's one of them, that kind of like what's happening here, where they don't have to deal with external media. They can just take their own pictures, take their own video, and put out their own media for people to consume. That's got a cynical, almost conspiracy theory aspect to it. But, you know, there isn't a large organization in the country that wouldn't enjoy completely controlling the message themselves.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, Malcolm, how many more? What do you think?
I can do one more here, okay. And then we do the Twitter question.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Ryan Haynes, the staff seems to be putting an emphasis on bringing in talent through the transfer portal. Should we be considering transfer portal additions when evaluating recruiting rankings?
Absolutely. And we do. Will and I just had this conversation
yesterday
in the office about how we want to possibly change our recruiting coverage in the future. Maybe recruiting and the transfer portal all fall under a player personnel talent acquisition department. Because, like, okay, Virginia Tech fans got really, really mad when Virginia Tech missed out on, let's say, Ricky Slade, right? A borderline five-star running back from Northern Virginia who went to Penn State, was a bust and now plays at Old Dominion. But our recruiting rankings would have looked better if they signed him. Instead, Tech went out and got two proven FBS Power 5 running backs in Blackshear and Herbert, and they're going to get a combined 3 years of good production out of those two guys. One of them might make the NFL, too. But it doesn't help Virginia Tech's recruiting ranking any. The narrative is still that, oh, Virginia Tech can't recruit.
Yeah.
But Penn State, who got nothing out of their four-star running back,
has a higher recruiting
reputation than Virginia Tech does, who will get a lot of production from two transfers.
Yeah.
So, and I don't even think the recruiting sites have figured out how to incorporate all that and everything.
So a couple things I can add there is, speaking specifically to the recruiting sites, you can already see 24/7, if you go look at their transfer portal page, they rank players by position in the transfer portal. And it's a dual ranking. It's take the case of Ricky Slade. Mm-hmm. Ricky Slade is ranked as a 3-star transfer, but they show you his original 5-star recruiting ranking. So that's interesting. Mm-hmm. So 24/7, it's got to be having these discussions, and they may be close to melding those two things together.
And Khalil Herbert was ranked the #1 transfer running back in the country, and Blackshear was #6.
Imagine if Virginia Tech recruited the #1 running back in the country out of high school. How freaking out would you be? Well, right. They got the #1 running back from the transfer portal.
Right, and here's the thing. The transfer portal guy is proven.
Yeah.
Khalil Herbert is a proven player. Raheem Blackshear is a proven player. Ricky Slade might have been ranked high. He might have run over a bunch of tiny Northern Virginia teams. But he was not proven on the college level, and guess what? Now he is.
So the other thing I would add is that we tend to at times get a little critical about Virginia Tech's recruiting, but I completely admit I stole this thought from Chris Coleman. Chris has pointed out that Virginia Tech does really well with the transfer portal because you're dealing with guys who have gone somewhere and maybe been distracted by the bright lights and gone to a certain situation that wasn't good for them. And they don't care about that stuff anymore. These are grown men. Justice Reed is 24 years old. He's a grown man. He's likely to peek inside the weight room and go, yep, I know what happens there. It looks good to me. Let's go. What about football? Right. And Justin Fuente and his staff, I think, can talk to guys like that at this point in their careers maybe better than they can deal with high school and all the crap that comes with high school recruiting.
Yeah.
So that's, you got to give this staff credit. They're pretty good at the transfer portal thing.
I think that's a good way to maybe close it, thinking about the future, unless you have a Twitter question.
So let me see if I can dig up a question on Twitter. I think I did see one that is fairly simple to answer. So Andrew Fontana wants to know who will step up in place of Caleb Farley in the secondary.
Yeah. So I guess that'll be a competition between Armani Chapman and I would guess Devin Taylor, the transfer, although he's not going to be fully cleared to practice, I believe, until next week. So actually the season getting pushed back by a week would, I guess, give him a better opportunity to win that job. But, I would think one of those two guys – because Taylor's getting here so late, you would have to give Chapman the edge early in the season. Taylor's a guy who the longer he's here and the more he picks up the system, the better it will be for him. Probably the same thing for Changa Hodge. You know, it's difficult for a wide receiver to come in and pick up an entire passing game in less than a month or about a month. Those are the two guys I would expect right now. And Breon Murray, I would say, has an outside opportunity there as well.
So a couple quick answers. Ron John says, I've cut the Facebook cord. Good for you. Is there any other option for viewing? Not live, but we do archive the video.
Not live, but let me do say, since the last time I've done a podcast, we now have options to listen on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, as well as Apple Podcasts and SoundCloud. So
now, as far as viewing the video, we archive that to YouTube.
Yep.
Generally within a couple of hours. So go to YouTube/TechSideline and you can catch it. Let's see. And there was another one I wanted to answer. How big was it for this season and for future transfer candidates to get Blackshear eligible? So one of the comments that was made, and I was starting to worry about this comment, was Virginia Tech starting to get a reputation for not being able to get transfers eligible. The Brock Hoffman situation, Burmeister doesn't really count, but when you are being negatively recruited against, doesn't matter what the details are.
Yeah.
You're an opposing coach.
Perception's greater than reality.
You could say, oh, they couldn't get Burmeister eligible, they couldn't get Hoffman eligible, they couldn't get Blackshear eligible. Why would you transfer there? Come to my school instead. Well, now there's this flies counter to that narrative. So we just talked about how Virginia Tech does a pretty good job mining the transfer portal. So that's big. Clearly it's big for this year. We talked about that, but it's also big for your reputation when you're out there trying to get players from the portal.
I don't have anything to add to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we are almost 90 minutes in to the podcast.
That's great, man. It's been fun.
17 days until the season kicks off.
I'm hating the masks. I think I hate the way they look, but I think it'll sound okay.
I wore one when I went to San Diego, so probably 7 to 8 hours between flights and sitting in airports and all that, and it didn't bother me at all. You don't feel like you even have it on, but when you're talking, it's a lot different when you wear one this long and you're talking the entire time.
Yeah,
I will say that.
Yeah.
It's starting to get a little sweaty under here.
So, you know, we after all this started, we kind of let the podcast lapse. And that was just me being bullheaded. We spent a lot of time and effort getting all of the sound right, building the set, getting the video right, doing all these things that we do. And I just don't want to do it another way. We did a Zoom podcast with Nick Brown, and Nick did fine hosting it. I just thought it sounded like crap. There was no video available afterwards, you know. This is the way I like to do it. So if we got to wear a mask to do it, that's fine with me. We'll do it.
Well, a great show. Thanks to everybody for chiming in with the questions at the end, and we look forward to the next one. Any closing thoughts before we sign off?
Just thanks to Jonathan Fisher and the Grit Gear guys for sponsoring the podcast.
There you have it. Episode 132 of the Tech Sideline Podcast in the books. That'll do it for us. For the best producer in the land, Malcolm Stewart, our managing editor, Chris Coleman, our founder and general manager, Will Stewart, I'm proud podcast host Evan Hughes saying so long. Thanks so much for watching and listening. This is the Tech Sideline Podcast brought to you by the Fisher Law Firm. Have a great week, Hokies.